teaching sociology and also the coordinator for the gerontology program at Illinois State University. I imagine the ADA is something that you are very familiar with.
It is indeed. You know, when we teach about aging and an aging society, we find that many of the issues have less to do with aging per se than they have to do with illness and disability. And so the needs of these populations overlap a great deal, and it turns out that the benefits and the impact of the ADA, which are kind of momentous, really, probably the most important civil rights legislation that's been passed since the 1960s, those will even be more apparent as we reach a society in which about 20% of the population is older and so more likely to have limited mobility, for example. And so, yes, it's tremendously important.
Why do you think this legislation is only 25 years old? Why did it take us so long to understand about accessibility and that need? Was it because the populations we were talking about were small compared to, let's say, what we're dealing with now, the aging baby boom population? What took so long for us to understand and to empathize?
I think there was a cultural shift or several cultural shifts that were involved. If we think in longer historical terms, you know, there were times when in lacking knowledge about the causes of disability, and these could be congenital disabilities, people with what were called birth defect or acquired disabilities, things where people have terrible accidents or illnesses which render them disabled in some way. There was almost, in the longer sweep of time, a sense in which this was a sign that people were sort of out of favor with God. There was kind of mystical thinking about it. We moved from that to a kind of out of sight, out of mind. We tended to warehouse people with disabilities, whether they were mental disabilities or physical or cognitive. And it wasn't until not that long ago, really, that we had places like large mental hospitals and others where people were simply shunted away, not given much of any therapeutic, treatment or support. And all of that kind of reflected a cultural fear and ignorance of disability. I think what's kind of subtle but important to consider is that what followed that was kind of a medical model where certainly there were many great and miraculous things that came into being that helped many disabled, many people with disabilities. Still, it reflected an assumption that people with disabilities were somehow in need of fixing, that they were non-normative, and that we needed to somehow alter them in order to make them more like able-bodied people. So the problems of disability were kind of located in the people with disabilities rather than in the larger society. I think after the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, there was a sense that same model of inclusiveness and civil rights was taken up by the independent living movement within the United States in the 1960s, 70s, and beyond. And so it was a long time coming that we came to conclude that people with disabilities were fully full-fledged members of our society. And, of course, we were also directed to all the contributions, at least potential contributions, that such people make. And so the ADA passed 25 years ago by a Republican president was the culmination of a lot of political and social action that had unfolded for the previous 20 or 30 years.
And in 25 years, we have read news stories, watched news stories on television, heard it here on the radio about people's struggles to make sure the ADA is complied with, to make sure that accessibility is a reality for anyone who needs it. And that struggle, I guess, will always continue because it's hard for people to truly understand, unless they have been in someone else's situation, what that lack of access can mean to them. And I wonder if you would offer your thoughts on, you know, clearly the ADA has not fixed the issue at hand, which is making people understand and granting that access without having to fight for it, because that's the piece that bothers me the most is I shouldn't have to ask you to comply with the law. The law's there for a reason, but you still see that struggle happening a lot. Have we come far enough? Are we going to have to keep continuing to educate and moving forward with the ADA? And would the law even change? Or should it change in any way?
Yes. Everything you say is really on target, Beth. I think the ADA is a necessary but not a sufficient step in fulfilling the aspirations of the people who passed that into law. And it was also, we should say, accompanied by other important legislation. For example, within the field of education, legislation that mandated access to educational resources for people with disabilities. But I think that there's still, disability presents us with policy barriers. And the ADA went some distance toward addressing those. There are physical barriers in the built environment of our society in terms of access that people have or don't have to buildings, to transportation, to employment and education. And then there are still cultural barriers, and the cultural barriers remain. And so this is one important step, but a lot needs to be yet done. We would have to say, for example, that the statistics are really quite appalling when we look at all of the indices of quality of life within the United States, such an affluent nation, with respect to poverty, unemployment or underemployment, higher education, quality of housing. On all of these counts, people with disabilities as a group, and what we're doing is lumping together an enormously diverse group of people. But as a group, they continue to lag dramatically behind in terms of their life chances. And we know, for example, this hits home with me. I have a nephew lives in Boston who was born severely prematurely. He was less than a pound at birth. And although he has problems with his verbal fluency, he has a stammer and he has some other partial paralysis. He's now a young man in his early 20s. But he has enormous gifts cognitively and contributions he can make. And yet, still he faces a very uphill battle in terms of forming an independent and rewarding life. And that's not only a problem, a lament for him, but for all of us, because we are potentially wasting a massive pool of talent and contributions that could be, could be available to us from people with disabilities. So I think that maybe, we get distracted and overwhelmed by social needs, especially when economic times are hard. But something like an anniversary of the ADA is really useful. It becomes a point for reflection and summing up and sort of re-examining how far we've come, just as you're doing with your program this morning. And so we have to say, again, it's been a very important step in terms of accessibility, but we have a very long way to go.
Chris Wellen with Illinois State University teaches sociology, is the program coordinator, and I believe started the gerontology program at Illinois State University. Is that right?
No, I didn't start
okay.
it. I'm just tending that garden. It was there long before I arrived.
Good to know. Gerontology, a very important subject, as we know. And we're talking to him today, asking his perspective from that vantage point for the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. George H.W. Bush signed that into law 25 years ago today. And we have come a long way, and there have been a lot of improvements, but there's still more work to be done. I wonder, from the global perspective, how do we fare as a nation in how we treat people with accessibility, access issues, with disabilities, with physical, emotional, mental wellness? Are we leaders, or are we falling behind?
My knowledge of comparative policy in this area is really limited. I have colleagues who have really deep knowledge of this. My sense is that we're in the middle, Beth.
Okay.
Certainly, there's no question that there are areas in the developing world where there's almost a total absence at the federal level or at the local level of policies or programs that ensure access. There are still nations. I had a student, for example, not so long ago who was from Nepal, and Nepal at this point really doesn't have any kind of infrastructure for aging policy. Aging and disability continue often to be seen as family responsibilities and concerns. And so when we look at the less affluent developing world, we appear enlightened. I believe there are some other nations, particularly those who have had federal centralized health care programs and different kinds of structures for funding education that would appear considerably more progressive than we are. And so I would have to say that we are kind of in the middle on that issue.
It's just like anything else we deal with socially and culturally. When you meet someone, know someone, or have a relative who's going through what this type of legislation tries to deal with, you understand better what life without equal access is like. And I think that as the baby boomer population ages and as aging challenges our society and infrastructure in particular, I think we have this forced empathy where we finally understand maybe what we weren't seeing 25, 50, 100 years ago in a very different light, because people who have been so capable physically suddenly in large groups they're aging, and we are aging, and they're not going to stop living, and they're not going to stop expecting the life that they have earned and they have experienced, but they're going to do it differently. And through ADA compliance, so many facilities, so many programs have already now put in that infrastructure and placed into action policy that will help the baby boomer generation, regardless of what their special needs might be right now. It's going to help them.
I guess with older people, we tend to see them in a cultural sense as deserving. There's always that sense in which people have made contributions and sacrifices for the larger society. And so we have been those times in our history where we instituted income support and broad-based health care, that has been kind of exceptional in our history. And those exceptions have been, in both cases, of course, targeted at older adults. Too often, we've not brought that way of thinking, I think, to people with disabilities. There's been a kind of nihilism, which is a fancy word, I guess, for a kind of hopelessness or pessimism, mm-hmm. that because in the past the horizons for disabled people were so limited, we have sometimes felt that we shouldn't invest the resources or the hope in helping to enhance their quality of life. And so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the thing that's, I think, important is that, like in my job as a college teacher, I teach hundreds, even thousands of people who are inspired to go into various allied health and helping professions, whether it's special education, social work, a broad set of fields. And these people really get it. They realize that there's human potential and that our job is to maximize that. And that makes sense from a civil rights perspective. It also makes sense simply from a kind of rational economic perspective, because, as I said before, we are squandering an enormous amount of talent. And I think, although it's not our place this morning at all to get into any partisan politics, it's very difficult to see when we face budget difficulties, as we do here in Illinois, that sometimes these most vulnerable people, for example, people who receive in-home supportive services or families who need help with children with disabilities, these vulnerable people seem to be among the first to be seen as fitting, I guess, for these cuts. And so I think that somehow that seems to reflect or bespeak a lack of equity or a lack of faith in the value of these people within our society.
That speaks volumes, and unfortunately, it speaks volumes about who we are as a state. But as you said, that's a debate for a different day. Dr. Wellen, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.